Welcome to Cathedral Square, hosted by Father Christopher Smith, Episcopal Vicar and Rector of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. For the next hour, you'll have an opportunity to find out about some of the history, little-known facts, and the upcoming events at the beautiful campus on the corner of Chapman and Lewis, or as we like to say, at the intersection of faith and reason.
Welcome to Cathedral Square. I'm your host, Father Christopher Smith, Episcopal Vicar and Rector of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California, the cathedral for the Diocese of Orange. Cathedral Square is a very busy place. On Cathedral Square, we have interviews with people who are involved in aspects of the cathedral itself or involved in the work of the church here in the Diocese of Orange. We have special programs that are reflections, renewal talks. We also feature every week a homily and some music from Christ Cathedral. So Cathedral Square, as a busy place, is very happy to welcome a very special guest today who I have known for many years. And he's Father Eugene Lee, who is the director of the Korean Martyrs Catholic Center here in the Diocese of Orange. Father Eugene, welcome.
Thank you. That's great to be here. Nice setup here.
Yes, it's great to have you.
Thank you.
And Father, if you could just give us a little sense of yourself, you know, how long you've been ordained, and maybe just a little journey of your time here as a priest in the Diocese of Orange leading up to your present assignment.
Sure. I was ordained in 2004 after formation at Mount Angel Seminary in Oregon. The first 2 years at St. John Seminary, and then we transferred to Mount Angel. Yeah, and then been at the various parishes, mostly with the Korean Catholic centers in our diocese, but I also had a 5-year wonderful time at Our Lady Queen of Angels in Newport Beach. And then I also helped out of the Korean community at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton in Irvine, which is now Our Lady of Peace in Irvine. Then St. Thomas Korean Center in Anaheim. And my current assignment, where I've been 9.5 years, is Korean Martyrs Catholic Center in Westminster. So a little snapshot of my history here.
Great. And you're the director of this center.
Yeah, director. Yeah.
So what is it? What's the difference between a center and a parish?
Yeah, we predominantly serve the Korean community. And so the Koreans are divided. The whole diocese, I should say, are divided in 3 different sections. St. Thomas handles mostly North County. Our Lady of Peace is mostly South County. And then Korean Martyrs handles mostly West County or Central. And because we're catered primarily towards that one ethnic group, we are not considered a parish, although we run just like every other parish.
Yeah.
Have a pastoral council, finance council, and faith formation for children and adult programs and ministries and mass and confessions and all of that. And we are open to anybody and everybody, and especially our English-speaking ministry certainly has non-Koreans as a part of our parish as well. But because it's primarily catered towards that one ethnic group, they call it a center. And hence, my title becomes director rather than pastor, but for all intents and purposes, it's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, your responsibilities would be almost exactly
pretty
the
much.
Same as
yeah,
the pastor
pretty much,
would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I just thought of this. I never thought of it before, but as a center, do you have a responsibility for, like, hospital ministry and your boundaries? Or do you have boundaries, I guess?
That's a good
the question.
I don't have it as much. However, our parishioners have a much more wider base, and so I am called, I think, to much further distances for hospitals than I might ordinarily be called to if I was at a parish, because our parishioners go from everywhere, from, you know, the L.A. side to South County, even up to North County, so I'm driving to a lot of different hospitals, yeah.
So they don't necessarily stick within what traditionally are the geographic boundaries
right.
of a what we used to call the territorial parish.
That's right. That's right. But it is somewhat by distance. So,
sure.
But yeah, it isn't as, those geographical boundaries that a parish would have.
And could you just tell us a little bit about your patrons, the Korean martyrs? Who are the Korean martyrs?
Yeah, they are our forebearers. They have provided amazing witness. There was severe persecution of the church in the early 1800s. So for about a century, starting in 1800, there was severe persecution. And
that was persecution by the government?
Yeah. At the time, it was a monarchical or, a royal government. And they had a very strong, stratified social system, which you were not allowed to cross from one social level to another. It was very strict, and it was to maintain social order and really to maintain their own power. And so the Catholic Church posed a threat because Mass was where everybody was supposed to be equal. Everybody is on one level before Christ, and there is no up or down, higher, or male or female, or any, it's all, I mean, there is male or female, but nobody's higher or lower,
exactly.
And it's all equal. And the higher ups did not like that and saw that as a threat to their power structure. And so began severe persecution. And it was brutal. It was brutal. Lots of bloodshed and torture and imprisonment. And it came in waves over a century. But we prevailed and planted the seeds for a blossoming, vibrant church in Korea.
And there are some specific martyrs that are named as Korean martyrs.
Yeah. Well, our Pope John Paul II canonized 103 of them in 1983 or 4.
Yeah,
like
I remember that.
Those are named. And the patron of them all, the center of them all, would be St. Andrew Kim, who was the first Korean-born priest. And he was martyred. But yeah, there's 103, and we are named after them, 103 martyrs.
Yes. It's a very different kind of experience. I imagine that the Korean Catholics carry a great sense of pride with regard to how Catholicism was virtuously and heroically and courageously maintained in the midst of such a persecution.
Yeah. Our pride and joy is we always claim that we were in a church that was not started by foreign missionaries. And the way it worked was...
Good. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, that... there was trade emissaries that would go from Korea into China, and as they were in China, they brought back some documents from the church, catechism and other teachings. They were lost in the hills of Korea for a while, and then they were rediscovered by scholars who were hungry for change, social change, and as they read the documents of the church, they found that this was a beautiful foundation to a new change in society. New social structure. It was very refreshing. And so they started to study it more deeply. And then they actually started implementing a hierarchical structure, the priests and all of that, without really a clear understanding of what true orders was. And so by the time the first missionaries arrived, the true or validly ordained priests arrived, they already saw a fledgling, blossoming and vibrant church all set up. With priests and everything, but as they inquired about it, they realized that it was an innocent oversight, but there were invalidly ordained priests that had been running the show there, and lots of faithful had been following, but they understood that that was just a lack of understanding of how it works, and I think they remedied the situation. It was just a beautiful upswell from the people, and it's this organic development of the church, really hungry for change and really hungry for the refreshing truth of Christ.
It is rather unique that can say it's really homegrown Catholicism.
Yeah, that's right.
Rooted in an attraction to the teachings of the church, which really talked about all people being equal in God's eyes.
That's right.
And really kind of chipping away at that.
Yeah.
Rigid class structure, if you will.
Yes, that's right.
Wow. Well, that's very good reason for people to be especially proud of the Catholic heritage, you know?
Yeah, and I think the legacy carries in that I just sense a great ownership and vibrancy, the sense of investment in the faith among the people. And I'm sure it's not unique only to Koreans, but I do sense it. There's such a deep reverence,
yes,
for history and for the tradition. And I think that the name Korean Martyrs is always just a living reminder to us.
Well, yeah, you have the name.
Yeah,
exactly. And how about Korean Catholicism in the United States or Orange County, Los Angeles? Can you give us a sense of that?
Sure. I'm not 100% familiar with the country at large, yeah. but I know in Southern California, it starts in the early 80s, actually late 70s, mid 70s. So we, Korean Martyrs was the first mm-hmm. Korean Catholic Church in Orange County. But just before them was St. Agnes Korean Catholic Church, which was in Los Angeles. It's in Los Angeles still. So they're considered the oldest church, I think, in the United States, in terms of a Korean community.
Okay.
But we were started in 1973 in Korean Martyrs. And so we've been here ever since. So it's pretty much since the beginning of the diocese.
Now, if I remember correctly, was that center initially staffed by Columban fathers?
That's right. The Columbans of Ireland.
Yes.
And I still have a Columban priest living with me now. It's amazing, these fully Irish guys giving up their lives to go to all these other foreign countries. And yeah, the Columbans have an amazing legacy, not only in Korea, but of course in our parish as well. Just great guys.
Yes. And of course, you're carrying on that tradition in terms of your role now. And the center itself is a center of the Diocese of Orange, in the Diocese of Orange. Maybe you could say something about, you were at the center when Christ Cathedral was being renovated, when we purchased the campus and that sort of thing. Could you give us a sense of what that was like for you and for your center when this whole thing happened now?
Sure.
Called Christ Cathedral?
I was excited. I really, really was.
Yeah.
I knew we needed a cathedral, you know. Yeah. And I did, personally, even as a pastor, I did not mind that we had to raise a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't mind the fundraising process, yeah. actually. I found it to be essential to our identity as Catholics. And it's a very important point to keep emphasizing to the Korean communities, to not get too isolationist or in their little bubble, and to have that sense of a broader communion. And the campaign to raise funds gave us impetus to remind ourselves and to really solidify and celebrate that broader communion that we're part of. And so it was exciting. Yeah. And when we did the dedication, it was great to have our parishioners get dressed up in their Korean outfits and come out here. And we were able to procure a relic of St. Uh-huh. Andrew Kim from Korea and get that placed into the altar of Christ Cathedral.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, for me, I found it fun. I found it exciting. And every time I have visitors from Korea, it's a standard part of my kind of trips. I have a kind of a standard journey that I take in Orange County.
Uh-huh.
And standard stop here is the Christ Cathedral. Just absolutely love it. I love bringing people here. I love telling people the whole story of Christ Cathedral. Everything about it, it's a fun story to tell. I always say it from when we leave Korean Martyrs on the way to Christ Cathedral. I tell the whole story, and I've done it many times, and I love taking a walk around here with them. So
that is great. Well, and that's what a cathedral is supposed to be. It's supposed to be a point of unity, and it's supposed to be a place for people to realize they're part of the bigger church and all the rest of it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Father, it's been wonderful speaking to you about your center, and we're going to take a break now, but when we come back, I want to know a little bit more about the Korean Martyrs Catholic Center and some of the main focal points of your ministry at the center. So we'll take a break now, and when we come back, we will continue our conversation with Father Eugene.
Saturday mornings are a little brighter with host Rick Howick in Orange County Catholic Radio. Here's a soundbite with a recent guest, Dr. Louise Dunn from the New Hope Crisis Hotline.
It's interesting, though, that even with people that tell us that they're atheists or agnostics, sometimes we ask them if they still want us to pray for them. How many people say, I can't hurt? So we still offer that. But if the person makes it clear up front they don't want that, of course, we don't pressure anybody in any way.
Check out OC Catholic Radio, Saturday mornings at 9 on Relevant Radio. Or come find the podcast at OCCatholic.com/radio. That's OCCatholic.com/radio.
Welcome back to Cathedral Square. I'm your host, Father Christopher Smith, rector of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. And my very special guest today is Father Eugene Lee. And Father Eugene is the director of the Korean Martyrs Catholic Center here in the Diocese of Orange. We've been talking about the center, Korean Catholicism, the Korean martyrs. And now, Father, I'd just like to hear a little bit more about the center. Maybe you could give us a few statistics, if you will, like, number of
sure.
registered members, kind of the demographic, age span, and those kinds of things.
Sure.
Well, we're small. We're a tiny operation, but we're hopping and popping and very vibrant. So we have probably, I'd say, about 450 to 500 pretty active families, and then, another couple hundred on top of that that are connected to our parish. And primarily Korean-speaking, but we do have everything from kindergarten to a full adult ministry in English. So our faith formation for our children, plus our sacramental preparations and all of that. So young adult group, which is wonderful in the English side, and a little bit of an older community, but still very vibrant young families coming up right behind them. And it's fun, but I'd say it's like a quaint family there. A lot of piety and depth in terms of the faith. It's very mature and stable and very homey feel there. Very, very homey. I love it. Loved every minute there.
Oh, that's great. What would you say are some of the primary concerns of your people or the needs that you've learned that they have?
I'd say that our challenges are pretty much the same as any other parish. It's all about evangelization. It's about breaking through all of the clutter and distractions and the attractions of the secular world and trying to bring people into that transcendent world and connection with the Eucharist and love of Christ. And so just like any other parish, we face those challenges of faith, but also for us to continue to find ways to bridge always with the larger diocese, we might have a tendency to become somewhat insulated. And so as a diocesan priest, I have that always at the forefront, and I'm very engaged with the diocese. And so it's good for the people to see that in me and for us to continually do our part for the broader communion. But yeah, other than that, it's pretty much the ongoing grinding work of evangelization. That's what we're dealing with. Yeah.
And are you finding that the generations are kind of, if you will, handing on the faith to the generation, the newer generations?
They're trying.
Yeah.
They are trying.
But I suppose the challenge would be similar to what it is in any other place,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, and for most pastors, I would hope and imagine that we are focused on the young families. You know, they need our TLC, our 10-11 care, and so I placed it as a high priority myself to make sure that our young families are taken care of and ministered to in the best way possible. But yeah, it's always challenging, and our young mothers and fathers have so many other things pulling at them, and so we're trying to provide a place that's very attractive and warm and welcoming and inviting and inspiring for them to root down in, so that they can pass on the faith to their kids.
Yeah, well, that's great. And in terms of your experience as director there, or maybe just in Maria ministry, you mentioned you've been in Korean ministry for many years, not just at the center, center.
Yeah,
yeah,
17 years,
uh-huh.
Yeah. Been there.
A long time.
Yeah.
What would you identify maybe as some highlights of that ministry?
Oh, man, I love it. It's there's something about culture, something that is very, very powerful. It's a very powerful unifying factor, and to bring unity together, and then we could build off of that to benefit and enhance the faith. So the sense of the family feel,
yes,
is something that is very acute at our parish. Everybody knows everybody. And also there's a sense of real investment and ownership. Because of that, there's people who really understand that there's sacrifice that's necessary to keep a vibrant community. So sacrifice is never in short supply, really, at the Korean community. People really, really care about the faith. And I would imagine that would exist in all of the parishes. But I'd say in the Korean community, because of the Korean culture that automatically has that base level unity that we have from there, we're able to expand and build on for our faith. So.
Well, that's the great gift that the Korean culture and other cultures bring to the United States and to the church, for sure.
Yeah.
Is the cultural value that's placed on family.
That's right. Yeah. Yes. And so, you know, we call each other brother and sister, the Korean word for that. Every time we refer to each other, and it's not just at special moments, it's all the time, as it's completely normal to say brother and then say the name. And we always say
that really?
All the time. Yeah, brother. It's 형제님 and 자매님, which is, we use that all the time, and it means brother and means sister. And so that family feel is embedded into the language itself. I'd say another benefit, another highlight mm-hmm. Of the Korean experience is just their manner of worship. It's just so reverential. It's very harmonious. And so, you know, nobody ever leaves Mass early, ever. And it's not because I enforced it. It's just the way it is. And nobody ever comes late. It's very, very few come late, and very, 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 nobody ever leaves early. And it's just that sense of reverence and duty and it's not such a bad word all the time, you know, a sense of real duty to the community at large. So when you come late, you don't want to be a distraction to people. The way you dress and everything. So our ladies wearing, many of them wear their veils at Mass. So it's just something that I've always treasured as I celebrate Mass with the Korean people, this sense of deep, pious reverence, and unity and harmony in Mass. So, and that exists in other forms in other communities for sure. But yeah, there's something beautiful about it in the Korean community.
Well, no, that does vary from culture to culture and communities, you know, and, you know, kind of if you already have a built-in sense of reverence.
Yes.
Has to be a beautiful thing to experience.
Yes, absolutely.
And to watch and, you know, journey with people who really treasure their faith. And don't take it for granted.
Yes. And the challenge is to pass that on to the younger generation.
Yes. But, well, yeah. Yeah.
Ongoing, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of challenges, what are some challenges that you have encountered over the years or now?
Yeah, as I mentioned, it's just the same challenges of pretty much any parish of trying to. For me personally, my Korean wasn't my first language. I'm relatively fluent, but it's really trying to impart some of the deep and fundamental important aspects of our spiritual life and leading them prayerfully and spiritually, you know, into that deeper, transcendent kind of life that I think is required for us to really get anything out of the Mass.
Yeah, sure,
So I'd say that the challenge has always been bringing people into the deeper spiritual place. I think that's for any priest. We are trying to bring people into that transcendent and prayerful communion with our Lord, which is a disposition really required for Mass. And so that to me has always been challenging. You know, how do I translate that over? And especially when my Korean isn't that good, and to lead them there. And then, you know, on top of that, of course, just providing ministries in general that's engaging and relevant for them.
Yes.
But the most challenging for me has always just been, how do we bring them to that deeper a place beyond just the surface realm? And so our challenge.
Well, and, you know, as you're speaking, I'm thinking, as I've thought many times before in our pastoral ministries, in today's world, we have a lot of competition.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, gee, when you think about all of the stimulus out there, and you think about, you know, social media and the immediate access of entertainment and videos and video games and, you know, so many opinions and ideologies that are broadcast 24 hours a day that our people have access to.
That's right. Yeah.
At one time, you know, in the church, it was kind of like, you know, the church speaks and everybody listens.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes now we have kind of clamor.
That's
to find some hearing out there.
That's right. Yeah. And I found, for example, our young adults are always the most challenging for me because they're now at the age where they're not held captive by parental obedience. And, you know, they're young and they want to explore the world. And so, yeah, like any other parish, it's just trying to bring them in and to at least plant seeds that maybe will blossom later on. I always have that image that maybe we can't quite get them rooted now, but in the future, with enough TLC and persistence and love, our young adults will eventually come down to root and in their faith deeply and stay consistent with it. And so that's always our goal. It's always my challenge every day. Wake up, rack my brain, figure out how to make that all work for them.
Yeah. Well, you know, you remind me of that great little story about this old man who was planting peach trees in his backyard, and they were just little things, you know, and he's a really old guy, and so, you know, his neighbors, hey, old man, what are you planting those little peach trees for? You're never going to eat any of the fruit. And he says, no, I won't, but hopefully those who come after me will.
Ah, that's great. That's right. That's what it's all about.
That's what it's all about.
That's right. Yeah. That's what we do.
And that's especially, I think, important to remember when we're maybe having some discouraging moments or wondering, you know, is this worth it, what we're doing, that kind of thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, I know that certainly the center has been affected by the pandemic, and we're going to take a break in a minute. But when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about your role as director of the center, pastor of the center, and what's happened in terms of the pandemic. And we're going to take this break and afterwards come back and continue our conversation. I want to remind everyone that the last segment of the show is a homily and some music from Christ Cathedral. So we have a lot of great conversation coming up in the next segment. Please stay with us.
Here's a word of reflection from Christ Cathedral organist and host of Sounds from the Sanctuary, David Ball.
In St. Louis, there used to be these sort of clubs for Eucharistic adoration. It was really people watching the church all night. Each person would take an hour with the Blessed Sacrament exposed. My parents, we used to do this a couple times, and so I remember going to St. Gabriel, the Archangel in South St. Louis. It would be 1 a.m, and you'd knock on the door, and the one person who was scheduled for that hour would come out, look through a little peephole, let you in, and then you'd lock yourself in the church for an hour of stillness and meditation and prayer and whatever. And as a kid, it was interesting. It just introduced the idea of stillness to me at a young age.
Catch Sounds from the Sanctuary Saturday nights at 10 on Relevant Radio, or find the podcast at OCCatholic.com.
Welcome back to Cathedral Square. I'm your host, Father Christopher Smith, rector of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, California. And we've been talking with Father Eugene Lee, who is the director of the Korean Martyrs Catholic Center here in the Diocese of Orange. And as we've been talking about your ministry and your community, a reality that is right here before us still and started a little over a year ago is the pandemic. And I'm just wondering, Father, if you could say a word about, you know, how has your community been affected by the pandemic, and what have some of the consequences been?
Sure. I'd say on a personal level, I think I processed the pandemic really intensely, and it turned out to be an intensely spiritual experience for me. Mm-hmm. I, just like everybody else, there's so much uncertainty at the beginning phases, so much sort of almost a panic and fear. And so I just didn't know. None of us had ever been trained in any way whatsoever to deal with something like this. So for me, I immediately felt the need to be a shepherd, I have to admit. I just said, I have to figure this out. And so I hunkered down and I got on my knees first and foremost to help me to be that steadfast shepherd for the people. And so it just intensified my prayer like I've never prayed before. And then I just found it gut-wrenching. I found the entire thing in the early stages just gut-wrenching to close the doors. We had a phase when we closed the doors. And to have the parishioners banging on the door and wanting to come in and saying no.
Yes.
It's like, and I never in my life could have imagined as a Catholic priest saying, no, you can't come into Mass. It was just, it was awful. It really, really was. And then I think over the months, constantly just being aware that the church, the parish, provides that constant, stable place of peace and a place of calmness and stability, and that I needed to do our part to make sure that even if they're connecting with us remotely or from a distance, that they're aware of Christ's presence, and that the parish became a place of hope, a place of stability, a place of strength and renewal. So even if they weren't physically there, I just genuinely felt the communion. And then, you know, forced us to activate all of the social media stuff and all the technology that we've never used before, like Zoom, and update our webpage. And but in that, I really felt it. The people were in communion with each other through the Zoom, and we had a lot of people showing up through that. And we figured out how to make that work for the community during the pandemic, and then the live stream and all of that. And it just became, it awakened us to a whole new way of ministering for sure. But I'd say just on a spiritual level, it was very intense for me, both in a good way, but also sort of in a sad way or dark way. I found it very hard to see people not coming to Mass out of fear. And then later I kind of feel maybe as an excuse, you know, using the pandemic, but mostly that fear factor and just not being able to join with them in communion at the Lord's table was for me just a lot harder than I ever imagined it would be.
Well, and you know, who ever imagined that it would be, you
know,
right. That's the closest thing, you know, that I can come to, which, you know, I've never experienced, but the closest thing to that would be some government shutdown out of oppression kind of thing.
Yeah, that's right.
You're not allowed to worship anymore. That's not what this was about. This was about safety of and health and all that. I know for myself, I felt a tremendous sense of isolation and what do I do? And I even thought, you know, because I was hearing about all these things that other parishes were doing and, you know, with the technology and everything. And I said, oh, my goodness, I don't know how to do that.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. As the pastor, you know, if, at least for me, I don't have a big staff and I don't have any other priests. And so you sort of felt like you're the center of gravity. And there's so much decisions, you know, from like even just they didn't have hand sanitizers available at the time the pandemic started. I'm like scouring and I see on Amazon a little bottle for $300, you know, of hand sanitizer. And I'm just figuring out how are we going to do this, you know, and I'm the one trying to figure out the ratio of the cleaning solution to water, and you know, and I'm trying to figure out, is this the right solution? Is this going to eat up our pews? And I'm the one making the signs and ordering it and studying the CDC guidelines. And it was just so much. And I have to admit, in the early stages, I didn't keep myself in check, and I really sort of had an anxiety attack, you know, and really kind of broke down a bit. But fortunately, I had great friends right by my side to be there for me, and I rebounded, and it's been fine. And we've hit a great routine, despite the pandemic. And things are picking up now, and it's been good, but the early stages was certainly no fun.
Well, you know, Father, you mentioned that anxiety. I've suffered anxiety like I never did before in my life during this thing.
That's right. Yeah.
And, you know, thank God there's one particular friend I have that we got to that we would call each other every night.
Yes.
Just to kind of calm each other down.
That's right.
And, you know, that whole sense. But it did help to know that other people were also going through the same
thing. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Brother priest, when we connected, we absolutely supported each other during those times for sure.
Yeah. And now we're coming out of it. And what's that been like that we're kind of slowly returning?
Oh, it's fun. It's fun. We're still, we just finished our last Sunday Mass outdoors. We're finally moving indoors now.
Okay.
Our church is relatively small, so I've always felt that we needed to stay out. But
yeah,
the weather's nice out there. I actually enjoyed it. I actually kind of enjoyed the outdoor Masses for a while. You know, we had a kind of a noisy street next to us that would cause problems. But no, I've seen the people coming back and you know, I was revving up to really do that, you know, the post-pandemic parish. So, you know, getting the leadership united and reactivated. We were going to have a whole kind of day-long time of recollection, a little bit of period of mourning and, you know, just kind of seeing what just happened to us. And then really propelling ourselves towards the future and just getting excited and really, really excited for future plans. But that was short-lived in that I'm being assigned to another parish, but I just even there though I'm excited to begin to explore prospects of what does a post-pandemic parish look like and getting the leadership in place and let's just get excited and let's just go for it.
Well, that's your spirit, Father Eugene. You've had it ever since I've known you. Yeah. I mean, it's really let's just get going and do it. You have a very, very positive, hopeful spirit. Thanks. And in my opinion, that's the hallmark of a great pastor, actually.
Oh, I hope so.
And I want to talk just a little bit about something that's not easy to talk about. It's painful to talk about, and it's the recent occurrences of hate crimes and backlash against Asian people here in the United States. And I'm just wondering, Father, how that's affected your community, or what has that been like in terms of shepherding your people during this time?
Sure. I have to admit, I didn't address it too overtly, but I did ask a group to if they hear anything about any attacks or anything bad happening to them, that I just want to know about it. It's just really important, and then we'd be able to provide support for any victims if there were. And there were none. You know, nobody ever mentioned anything to me. But one thing, though, is that it is out there, and it's in our heads. And and so even my dad, one time when we were going to go to the beach, take a walk, he says, "Oh, we're going to get attacked." And I was just, oh. And it was really sad. It was a really sad thing that now there's a fear in our heads just to be able to take a walk. And so it's out there, but I haven't seen anything, thank God, at least for our immediate community. But yeah, I think it's an opportunity again for us as the Asian community to be aware of, you know, when there is injustice happening to other races now that we've really been on the brunt of it.
Right.
It awakens our sense of support for them as well. And so that is a preaching note to keep in mind that I should probably address that more overtly to my people. 'Cause yeah, I think there's a sense of solidarity that we need to have. 'Cause we're all one and we're all in it together. So let's all just get along.
Yeah. Well, I have two thoughts. One is the sadness I have in my heart, especially for elderly people, because elderly people have been the victims of some of these attacks.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
And my parents have gone to the Lord, but to think that they would be afraid walking outside and that, it's very sad.
Yeah, yeah.
And the whole necessity of being present and all, and knowing that we're walking with, and we walk with each other in our fears. And then the thing about kind of the bad thing is, or the solidarity, you know, my themes of life is living from a place of gratitude.
Yeah.
And I say to myself all the time, you know, great words first thing in the morning are thank you. And sometimes that thank you is super easy because everything's great. I feel physically great. But sometimes it's really hard to say thank you because I'm going through a hard time. I don't feel good. There's stuff that's not so nice going on. And the thank you isn't for the bad thing. The thank you is that I can now take an opportunity to let my fear or my suffering or whatever it is that I'm going through connect me more compassionately to people who are going through the same thing.
Yes. Yeah. Because, you know, I think in general, Asians, or at least the Korean community, they have a tendency to be relatively kind of on their own and isolated a bit. But this awakens us to, in our woundedness, you know, in our hurts, that to be aware of the plight of other brothers and sisters in other cultures and nationalities. And so I think this is a great opportunity to remember our humanity, you know. So, but yeah, definitely would like to continue to challenge our people to be aware of that.
Yeah. And when you said that woundedness, it reminds me of a book I read years ago called The Wounded Healer.
Yeah.
And I thought those two words are great, wounded healer.
Yes.
And it's possible to be a healer out of our own woundedness.
Yes.
And this time with everything that's going on, I think it's an important time to remember that. And that, of course, is what the reference was to Jesus, you know, the wounded one. Who's by his stripes we are healed, you know, by his suffering we are healed.
Yes.
Well, a lot to think about. Father, what keeps you engaged in your ministry?
Well, I mean, I know it sounds a little unoriginal or cliche, but it is the people.
Love it. Of course.
It's the people of God are amazing to me.
Yeah.
Never ever ceases to amaze me. It's never gotten old. I always remember, I've said the story before to the priests about, my first pastor, Father Monsignor, Kerry Ballou now. And when he said to me, you know, even after probably tens of thousands of masses he's done, and and 40 years in, he says it's still just as fresh, and I believe him now. But just that sense, it just never gets old to see the faith of the people, and especially during the pandemic, when I had that core group of people coming, even in the heat and the deepest, worst of the pandemic, they were still coming out and, you know, we were all distanced and careful, but there was that fear that they overcame. It was just inspiring to see that. And then as we're bouncing back now, the willingness for people to come out of their comfort zones, because, you know, we've think there's a sort of a COVID slump that a lot of the our church members have been in. And so to rise up from that and to shake off the dust and to get back into action, I've been seeing that a lot recently. And
wonderful.
It's fun. It's fun. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the resilience of our people and the faith that keeps them going is what really keeps me going in
Absolutely.
Many ways, too.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
It's been great talking to you, Father.
Thank you.
It's been wonderful knowing you over these years. And we pray all successes to you as you move into your new ministry, which is going to open up a whole new set of challenges and joys.
A whole new world. Yeah.
Yes.
That's great.
And we're going to take a break now, but when we come back, we're going to have a homily and some music from Christ Cathedral. You've been listening to Cathedral Square. And if you're ever in California or Garden Grove, please come by and visit Christ Cathedral. Father Eugene Lee, thanks so much for being with us today. You have been a great blessing.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Father.
Heard Deacon Steve lately?
You know, one of my favorite stories, Rick, is when Joan of Arc is before the Queen of France, and the Queen of France says, "How is it that you, a 14-year-old peasant girl, has God speak to you, and I, the Queen of France, do not?" And her answer to the Queen was, "Your Highness, God is speaking to you all day long, but you're just not listening." And I think the bottom line is, right? Is that not great?
You know, I love it. Catch Empowered by the Spirit with Deacon Steve Greco, Sundays at 12 noon, right here on Relevant Radio. You're listening to Cathedral Square. Thanks for tuning in today. Next, we'll hear from Father Christopher and a stirring message that he delivered on Pentecost Sunday. We'll also enjoy a small sample of some of the glorious music we heard that morning, featuring the talents of cantor Lauren McCall and organist David Ball.
To fill the heart. The feast of Pentecost is often called the birthday of the church. And it's called the birthday of the church because the day that the Holy Spirit descended upon the apostles and the holy women, the church was born. The church was born that day because now the followers of Jesus had the courage, the inspiration, the motivation, the enthusiasm to get out there, to leave the room they were hiding in, and to bring his life and love to the world. I have said so many times that we don't come to church to hang out in church all day long. No. We come to church precisely so that we can get out there again, go out those doors, and bring the life and the love of Jesus to the world. These 21 centuries later, after Jesus sent the Holy Spirit to the apostles and the holy women, we gather today as that same church. We gather today as that same church who are given the inspiration and motivation and courage to get out there and to bring the good news of the Lord's life and love to the world. We have been through a very difficult year or more, many, many months. And at this Pentecost Sunday, as we look back on the year and forward to the time ahead of us, I would like to take this opportunity on our birthday to describe who you are as God's church. You are a people with caring hearts. Your caring hearts have accomplished things beyond imagination, not only this past year, but over the passage of time. Your caring hearts have raised your children, have educated them, have fed them, have given them a place to live, have given them clothes to wear, have given them faith, have given them the capacity to love. Your caring hearts have accomplished and continue to accomplish that incredible task. Your caring hearts have also saved friends from time to time who were on the brink of disaster, and you reached out to them and you helped them. Your caring hearts have generously supported the work of the church. Your caring hearts have given of your time and your energy and your efforts to carry on the mission of Jesus, to participate in the life of the church. Your caring hearts have been broken sometimes. Sometimes you have felt very disillusioned and very disappointed, and yet you have opened your heart again to trust in God, when maybe you never thought you would be able to again. Your caring hearts have sometimes been broken by acts of prejudice against you, or broken by being deceived, or broken by somebody else's infidelity. Your caring hearts have been broken by people not keeping their word, or some other kind of huge hurt, and yet your caring hearts have not wallowed in that hurt, but have opened yourself up to let your hands be touched by the healing touch of God so that you can continue on. In these seeming endless days of the pandemic, your caring hearts have continued to be faithful to your faith and to your God. You have made valiant efforts to be cognizant of other people's safety and health during these days. Your caring hearts have really wanted to protect family members, friends, co-workers, people that you know and people that you don't even know. That's who you are, people with caring hearts. You are also people with very loving eyes. And believe me, I have seen a lot of them during this pandemic, because that's all we have been able to see on people's faces. And I know that your caring, your loving eyes have looked into the eyes of somebody else whose eyes weren't so loving or whose eyes weren't so hopeful. And your loving gaze has helped somebody say, okay, you know, I think I can make it through this day. And that happened because your loving eyes looked with love on somebody else. Your loving eyes have also cried. Your loving eyes have cried at the death of a loved one or at the death of somebody else's loved one. Your loving eyes have cried at losses. Your loving eyes have cried at the losses, perhaps of a job or financial security or the loss of a dream, the loss of hope. Your loving eyes have cried. Your loving eyes have also danced and sparkled and been alive because of something joyful that happened to you or to somebody else. In these days when we have really been able mostly to communicate through our eyes, your loving eyes have helped me and helped people that you don't even know to continue on. And you know what? You also have very strong and very generous hands. And those strong and generous hands over years and years and years, for many of you and others over less time, but your hands have worked hard. Some of your hands ache with arthritis. Some of your hands ache with bruises or cuts because you have worked so hard with them. Your generous and strong hands have worked for somebody else's well-being. Your strong and generous hands have held the hand of a loved one whose hands maybe were cold, and your strong and generous hand helped that person's hand to be warm again. Your strong and generous hands, perhaps, have held the body and the soul of somebody who is broken. Somebody who has been broken by illness. Somebody who has been broken by disappointment. Somebody who has been broken just by the tragedies that happen in life. And it's your loving and generous hands that have held the bodies of a loved one, a friend. And you have helped that person to be strong. Your strong and generous hands have also been lifted in praise to God. You've continued to pray. Those of you who can have come back to church, and those of you who can't are with us now, even in your living rooms or wherever you are, holding your hands up in praise to God during this time. And oh yes, how beautiful it is that your strong and generous hands have held the precious body and blood of Jesus in the Eucharist and have said, yes, Lord, I believe that you are with me. 21 centuries ago, Jesus breathed on the apostles and the holy women, and he said, receive the Holy Spirit. This very morning, in just a few moments, the Holy Spirit is going to breathe in a special way on 14 adults gathered in our cathedral. And you folks are going to receive the fullness of that Spirit so that you too will have the courage and the inspiration and the motivation to get out of here and go into the world to touch it with the Lord's life and love by your life. And I thank you for your presence here today. We are gathered at this very moment, the church alive with God's Spirit. And so I say to all of you and to us, may our caring hearts and our loving eyes and our strong and generous hands bring the Lord's life and love to the world this very day. a world that is very much in need of this gift. So I say to you, how beautiful you are, God's holy people. Happy birthday.
You've been listening to the Cathedral Square Radio Show with Father Christopher Smith. To hear this program again or to download the podcast, go to OCCatholic.com and click radio. Be sure to share and tell a friend as well. Have a blessed day.